conducting these atrocities. And it's not a region that Israel is making itself any more amenable to being able to absorb, to live with. Now, Netanyahu, I think, comes out of this, yes, feeling politically strengthened. His coalition allies who have been wavering because they don't want, neither did Netanyahu, by the way, they don't want this Gaza ceasefire deal, which I think has now been endangered to the point of very likely its collapse after or perhaps even during phase one being guaranteed. But those coalition allies have come around and said, now we see a way to continuing to support you. This is great. Netanyahu may feel empowered to go further, to even call an early election. He hasn't got what he wanted on Iran. And normalization with Saudi Arabia seems to have really taken a back burner role here. But the idea that this can be actualized, and I think here Netanyahu has a bit of a dilemma in a way, because he will now think, maybe I have to make good on this. Now, we hear this narrative from the administration. Yeah, it's the humane, they actually said this. It's the humane thing to do, because who could live in those circumstances? The humane thing to do would not have been to send those bombs. And let's not pretend that Biden didn't send the bombs. This is the legacy of the genocidal Biden administration. The humane thing to do would have been not to have sent those bombs, to have prevented this long ago. And you know what? If you really are talking about the well-being of the Palestinians, well, there is an area adjacent to Gaza where many in Gaza, many Palestinians come from originally, in the south of Israel, in the Negev, in the Nakab, an area that they could go back and forth, work in Gaza. So this is not about those things. And I would just point out the degree of concern in the region when the Saudis take to their own social media in the middle of the night to reject this. And what you might see, if it were actually implemented, which I don't think it will be, I really don't, is Jordan and Egypt becoming frontline resistance states, something they haven't been until now. So the unintended consequences rule really plays out here. And I think the other headline is, I just want to say, what do allies make of an America apparently so incapable of working out priorities? What are you thinking now if you're in Europe dealing with Ukraine? And indeed, what are you thinking if you're on the other side of that ledger and you watch America floundering around with madcap schemes?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Yusuf, the other announcements of the Trump administration related to the Middle East that occurred on Tuesday, the halt of funding for the Palestinian, extending the halt of funding for the Palestinian Relief Agency, UNRWA, the Trump's authorization of the transfer of more 2,000-pound bombs to Israel, and his executive order in reimposing maximum pressure on Iran.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, again, this is not particularly surprising. Trump is searching for ways to appear more pro-Israel than his predecessor, which is, as Daniel noted, supported the Israeli military through a horrific genocide for 15 months, one that is in many ways still ongoing and expanding to other parts of Palestine as we speak. And so these kinds of steps that he is taking is very much being done to further that image that somehow Joe Biden was not pro-Israel enough, and that, he is even more supportive of what Israel is doing. I think, you know, one thing to keep in mind in the background of this conversation is that after Elon Musk, the second biggest contributor to Donald Trump's reelection campaign was Miriam Adelson, who gave $100 million to Donald Trump's reelection effort. And this is also one of the biggest supporters of Benjamin Netanyahu. And I believe she was in attendance yesterday at all of the events between the two criminals who were gathering at the White House.
Well, Yusuf Munayyer, we want to thank you for being with us, Palestinian-American analyst, head of the Palestine-Israel program at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C., and Daniel Levy, former Israeli peace negotiator, president of the U.S. Middle East Project. Coming up, we look at the fight against Trump's escalating attacks on the trans community. With ACLU attorney Chase Strangio, the ACLU is suing the Trump administration. And we'll speak to a New York doctor who says he'll continue providing health care to transgender youth. Then a lawyer with the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, was fired last week by the Trump administration. Stay with us.
Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. Fa, 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 fa. Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. It's a bop, do your dance, let them watch. She a fan, he a flop, they just wanna kumbaya, nah.
This world can be flowers grow. All day, she only doing what she know. Weekends, get it popping on the low. If it was up to me, I wouldn't give it nobody no sympathy. I'll take away the pain, I'll give you everything.
Luther by the Grammy Award-winning Kendrick Lamar and SZA. Happy birthday, Arthur. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Since taking office, President Trump signed a slew of executive orders attacking transgender people and their rights. Today, we look at a key order that's being challenged by doctors, lawyers, and trans activists and their allies. Last week, Trump signed an executive order to withhold federal research and education grants from hospitals that offer gender-affirming care to transgender youth. Major hospitals across the United States then announced they'll stop providing such treatments. Others, such as the New York City Hospital Network, NYU Langone, tried to quietly cancel appointments. But on Monday, as the White House released a statement claiming the order was, quote, already having its intended effect, New York Attorney General Letitia James responded by warning hospitals they will be in violation of New York State anti-discrimination laws if they stop offering this care. This comes as the American Civil Liberties Union, Lambda Legal, and others filed a lawsuit Tuesday on behalf of transgender youth who say the order is depriving them of medical care, quote, solely on the basis of their sex and transgender status, unquote. In a minute, we'll speak with the ACLU attorney Chase Strangio and with a doctor who says he was willing to go to jail to continue to provide transgender health care. But first, on Monday, here in New York, trans youth and their families were joined by elected officials, medical professionals, NYU workers, and trans activists at a rally to demand the NYU Langone Hospital Network ensure gender-affirming care for trans patients. These are some of their voices.
I'm Lorelai Crean. I'm a trans kid, and it's amazing to be surrounded by people who are fighting for my rights, even if it's I have been stripped of my rights again, with NYU Langone denying access to life-saving, gender-affirming care to trans kids like me.
Shame!
I came here straight from school, and when I walked into first period, which was algebra, everyone asked why I had a megaphone with me, which I'm not even using because I'm using a mic now. I told them that I was coming to the protest because NYU Langone had stopped providing gender-affirming care to minors. My friend hadn't heard the news yet, and she started freaking out, telling me that she had an appointment there scheduled for a month from now, and asking me if that would still happen. I told them that I don't know, but we're here today demanding that it will.
Yes! I'm Cynthia Nixon, and I'm here as a lifelong New Yorker.
Yes.
And I'm here as a person who loves my city and my state. And I am here as actually a resident of Kips Bay. I live just a few blocks over there. And NYU is my hospital. Most importantly, I am here today as the mother of a proud trans man.
Yeah.
I am here today as the aunt of a proud trans man. My best friend's kid is trans. And my kid's best friend is trans. My wife and I, our lives are filled with the most amazing, beautiful, brave trans people, young and old, but especially young. My trans kid had his top surgery at NYU a number of years ago. His doctors were fantastic. His surgeon was the best we could have imagined. And the idea that this city is filled with young people who thought they had a place to go where they could receive the highest care, and that place has now been shut to them, sickens me. Sickens me to my core.
My name is Freya. I am 16 years old. I have been on estrogen since I was 14, and I know that I'm very privileged to be able to say that. But in the same breath, I can say that I am scared for myself, for my own health care, and for all of the other people like me. And I have one message to my kinfolk, because that's what we are. All the people who are here and are like me and are showing up willing to fight for our own rights or the rights of the people that we love and care about, don't let them win.
Some of the voices at the rally Monday calling on the NYU Langone Hospital Network to continue to restore gender-affirming care to transgender youth after canceling appointments for transgender children following Trump's executive order. Thanks to NYC DSA for the video. For more, we're joined by two guests. Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum is with us. He's a pediatrician, adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth in New York City. And here in our studio, Chase Strangio, co-director of the American Civil Liberties Union's LGBTQ and HIV Project. We welcome you both. Chase, let's begin with you. You were the first trans attorney to argue before the Supreme Court. We're waiting for that decision to come out. But you just filed a lawsuit. Explain what it is.
Yeah, so thank you, Amy. We are obviously living in a situation that is catastrophic for transgender people of all ages, particularly transgender youth, with actions from the Trump administration almost every day targeting our community that represents less than 1% of the population. And one of those orders sought to, in essence, threaten and coerce hospitals across the country to shut down care, including in places like New York and California and Illinois and Virginia, where people thought they were safe from the state level bans that have been passing for the last several years. And what we're seeing now is that there is a lot of compliance in advance with this executive order, as the rally in New York made very clear. However, we also have to know that it is the Trump administration that is holding our entire medical system in the United States hostage to threaten people, to punish transgender people for simply existing. And it is not just transgender youth. This is an order that goes up to 19 years old. I have been on the phone with people who deliberately waited through their entire adolescence until they were 18 years old so that they could access medical care. And then they had those appointments canceled on the way to the hospital on the week of those appointments. The devastation is staggering, and we are in federal court to make it clear that, first, the president does not have the authority to override Congress and decide how money that has been allocated by Congress, as the Constitution makes clear, can be taken away just because the president doesn't like how it's being used. And second, this action violates the individual constitutional rights of transgender adolescents and their families, as well as transgender 18-year-olds.
And Chase, as you mentioned, the transgender population of the country is around less than 1%. Why do you think that the Trump administration has focused so much attention on repressing and discriminating against the trans community?
I think the Trump administration is doing it for two reasons. And the first reason is that the Trump administration, as the campaign spending made clear, thinks that transgender people are an easy target for him to engage in this type of power grab where he exceeds his authority as president, thinks it's going to be legitimized, and then he can use that excess of authority to start targeting all sorts of other communities that do have political power. But he seeks to have a precedent in what he believes to be a vulnerable and unsupported community. So we need to see people standing up. And the second reason is that transgender people pose a threat to the reinforcement of the sex binary, which is a centerpiece of this administration. This is about deciding and enforcing government-mandated rules about how men and women can live in this country. And this is a full takeover for all of us that we should be very concerned about. It is part of the authoritarian move of this administration, in exactly like we see from leaders like Orban, Bolsonaro, and others who use control over the body, the gender binary, and the family to build their authoritarian power.
I want to bring Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum into this conversation, a pediatrician, adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth. Can you talk about what's happening in these hospitals? I've heard stories of one person after another, as Chase just said, about to go in for surgery, having all the medical preparation, and then being told it's canceled. You say you're willing to go to jail to continue to provide medical care for your patients?
Yes. You know, since I was quoted as saying that in the paper the other day, and I stand by my words, I've learned that there's more risk that comes to hospitals, at this point in time at least, than providers in terms of having their funding cut off and having their grants and so on turned off, and just having the flow of money into their institutions turned off, more so than providers. But I stand by my words. Since the NYU news came out and people have been turned away, we've actually gotten phone calls in my clinic of people who were just desperate to be able to come into care, and so we've accepted some of the people who have been turned away by NYU. I hope at some point they come to their senses and reverse their stance. My hospital, and I'm speaking my own views, I'm not necessarily speaking theirs, but they've been very supportive of me to continue to be able to do my work. But they've asked me to ensure that I make it clear that I'm speaking my views and not theirs for some very obvious reasons.
And Dr. Birnbaum, your thoughts on an executive order that declares that there are just two sexes, male and female, the impact that this has on the population, especially the transgender population?
I mean, it's a highly ill-informed and uninformed position for them to take. You know, we're talking about biology, not politics. And some of these folks, if they wanted to go into science, they should become scientists and stay out of and keep politics out of science. We have tons and tons of medical literature that backs up the practice that we're doing through the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, the Endocrine Society. You look at the references that they follow. Of course, there's more research that needs to be done. We're doing something that is scientifically based, and they're just making this up. If they want to accuse us of espousing gender ideology, well, we're following science, and they're the ones that are really espousing gender ideology.
Dr. Birnbaum, you have been getting texts nonstop and calls from your patients. What does it mean to interrupt transgender care?
Yeah, they are terrified that their care is going to be interrupted. Many of the young people that I take care of prior to coming into care were suicidal, actually referred to us by psychiatric units for ongoing care after they were hospitalized for a suicidal event. And they fear going back to that state where they did not have access to gender-affirming hormonal therapy. And so I've had to make reassurances. I've stated to them what I was quoted in the paper saying, I will go to jail to defend your care. Your care is not stopping. This is a safe space where you access your care, and it's going to remain that way. I anticipate that if the executive order were to go through, there will be deaths involved. One of the quotes from the young people at the protest the other day saying this was life-saving care. And I ascribe to that notion that it is life-saving. It is certainly life-affirming care. And to take that care away from them will definitely increase levels of dysphoria in young people, and many of them will go on to commit suicide or at least think about it.
Well, I want to end with Chase Strangio. How does this relate to the Supreme Court case and what will happen with the decision that will be handed down? And also the state attorney general, Letitia James, weighing in.
Yeah, so we are at the Supreme Court right now arguing that this very type of attack on medical care for transgender people violates the Constitution. Now, we are up against state officials and now federal officials that are trying to undo equal protection protections for the entire population. So this is going to be a major test at the Supreme Court this term. It will have impacts for these executive orders and whether or not they're constitutional. But even putting Scrimeti aside, which is the case at the Supreme Court, this exceeds the president's authority. There are very clear constitutional limits on what the executive branch can do, what the legislative branch can do, and what the judicial branch can do. And we see the president far exceeding his authority. And thankfully, there are attorney generals across the country that are stepping in, suing the administration, reminding entities in New York State that they have to continue to follow state law. But there are people who have fled their homes in places like Tennessee and Florida to relocate to places like New York and Massachusetts, only to have that care shut off. There, this is a crisis, and people need to be responding accordingly.
And Letitia James?
You know, I'm glad to see her stepping in and threatening hospitals because they do have to follow New York law. And at the same time, the Trump administration is threatening federal funding, which preempts state law. So we are in a situation where, yes, we need to fight back and remind people to follow the state laws. But we need to aim our focus at the Trump administration and the fact that they are coercing entities to shut off care to transgender people.
Chase Strangio, co-director of the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project, argued before the Supreme Court in December. Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum, pediatrician, adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth. Next up, we speak with a former top lawyer at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She was just fired as part of Trump's purge of federal workers. Back in 20 seconds.
With the quickness. Sweat, one sweat, two sweat, three.
Let me in by De La Soul. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We end today's show with the former top lawyer at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She was fired last week as part of the Trump administration's purge of federal workers and broad attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in the workplace. In a press release from the new EEOC leadership, titled, quote, Removing Gender Ideology and Restoring the EEOC's Role of Protecting Women in the Workplace, the acting EEOC chair, Andrea Lucas, says she'll prioritize compliance and litigation to, quote, defend the biological and binary reality of sex and related rights, including women's rights to single-sex spaces at work, unquote. For more, we're joined by Carla Gilbride. She is now the former general counsel of the EEOC after she and two EEOC commissioners were fired last week in the late night purge. In 2022, Gilbride became the first blind lawyer to argue before the U.S. Supreme Court. She's now the new deputy director of Public Citizen Litigation Group. Welcome to Democracy Now! Why were you fired? Talk about you and the commissioners. Is this even legal?
Hi, Amy. It's great to be here. So I was fired last week as general counsel of the EEOC. That's the position that heads the litigation program. As you mentioned, two of the four commissioners, two who were appointed by President Biden, were also fired, and that is unprecedented. There have never been commissioners fired before the end of their term, and this is not the only agency where Trump has done this in recent weeks. And the EEOC was established as part of the 1964 Civil Rights Act to ensure equal opportunity in the workplace based on make sure people are not discriminated on, based on race, based on sex, based on disability, age, or national origin, or religion. And I am concerned that President Trump removing commissioners will imperil that mission. I'm also concerned, based on the press release that you just read, that, you know, one of the parts of the EEOC's mission and the litigation program that I worked on as general counsel involved enforcing the 2020 Supreme Court decision in Bostock versus Clayton County, which recognized discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity as forms of sex discrimination. And the binary of sex that doesn't recognize, you know, that people, the reality, the lived reality and the medical reality that people have gender identities that do not match their sex assigned at birth, and that if someone is discriminated against because they're transgender, because they're non-binary, or certainly because of their sexual orientation, which is not mentioned in the in that press release, those are protected traits under Supreme Court precedent and under Title VII, and the EEOC needs to be able to vigorously enforce that law as passed by Congress and as enforced by the Supreme Court.
And Carla Gilbride, I'm wondering, you mentioned that this this kind of sledgehammer approach is not just at the EEOC, but throughout the federal government in the last few weeks. It reminds me that Mussolini, the founder of modern fascism, declared that fascism was, in essence, he called it corporatism, a merger of state and corporate power. And we're seeing this merger occurring right here now as more and more billionaires and business people are taking over the functions of government. I'm wondering your sense of what this means to the view of the state as a sort of a mediator of the conflicts within society, now to have this government so rapidly taken over by business people.
I am concerned about not only the many actions that the president has taken to exceed his powers under the Constitution, but also the influence of private, unelected representatives of corporations like Elon Musk, most notably through his role with this shadowy Department of Government Efficiency, which is involved in lots of different agencies. In my new role after leaving the EEOC, I've moved on to Public Citizen, which recently filed suit against the Treasury Department because at the orders of the Department of Government Efficiency, lots of private information of federal workers, of retirees, of anyone who does business and has financial information stored with the Treasury Department is now in the hands and has access has been given over to unknown and unaccountable, individuals who are affiliated with Elon Musk, who are affiliated with DOGE, which is not a government department, and the individuals, you know, working with Mr. Musk have not gone through the vetting that individuals would normally have to go through in order to have access to that sensitive private information. And so Public Citizen filed suit to seek an injunction, to seek a stop to this turnover of private information, which there are should be government safeguards to protect. But in this unprecedented sort of mixture of private and public authority through involving oligarchs at the highest levels of our government who are unelected, that needs to be stopped. And we hope that the courts will step in to put an end to this unprecedented mixture of private and public power and abuse of executive authority.
Carla Gilbride, before we end, can you describe what happened last week when you and two EEOC commissioners were fired? What happened? What time was it?
So I received the email at around 10:30 p.m. telling me that, you know, again, citing this sort of unbounded authority that the president has to have people that agree with him ideologically serving in his administration, that my services were no longer required. And the email also referred to, again, this concept of gender ideology.
You're listening.